welcome to Season 4 of the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Spond. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy this episode. Hey, Todd, welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for the invite, Scott.
Genuinely, I'm delighted with the guests we got on the podcast because it's always kind to give up their time. But one of the reasons that I feel so passionate about the message we try and put across on the podcast is some of the things that I've heard from you over the years. So you were always a guest I was keen to get on and reach out to, and I was brave enough to ask. And to be fair, when we did ask, you come straight back and said, yep, and squeezed in on, I know what is a busy schedule for you. So thank you so much. But just in case there's people out there that aren't obsessed as I am about the work you do and your messages and your Twitter and things like that, would you mind sharing a bit about, you know, your bit about your background, who you are and what it is you currently do?
Yeah. So, you know, I grew up playing soccer, everything from kiddie soccer through college into the pro ranks of the United States. Had a good opportunity to spend a year on study at University of Sussex in England there, just south of your location.
Yeah.
So I've always been involved, whether it be playing or coaching, involved with education. And I don't necessarily make the distinction between the two because it's all about maximizing the potential of other kids or ourselves as coaches. So had a chance and I took it right away. Obviously got an invite from Johan Cruyff in 2002 to move to Barcelona and work with him. Ultimately, years later, married into the family. So my six children are his grandchildren and my wife is Chantal Cruyff. So we know where the brains are in the family, and I've just followed along, taking good notes and trying to keep the kids at the right trainings at the right time. And that brings us basically today. I just had a good opportunity to work with Johan, I think one of the best in the game, and have a chance to do so at the upper echelons of the game. So I'm just trying to connect the dots between kind of grassroots, humble soccer from which I've come to some of the best minds in the game and see if we can't kind of pollinate ideas so that as parents we're better, and as players they're better, and as coaches we begin to hone our craft as colleagues worldwide, which is I consider what we are.
I think, isn't it funny, as you kind of look at grassroots football, and I think things have improved, especially in the UK the last 5 years or so with regards to training, but some of the things we're putting into place now and looking at were things that obviously Johan was doing back in the 70s and 80s, right? And it's amazing just how long ago that was when you think about it now, and it's taken a long time for us to catch up with that. He was obviously clearly way ahead of his time.
I think so. I think, you know, of his generation, they understood the value of playing, you know, just the value. And I say that so simply, it's the value of playing the game. So he just managed to carry that to the upper echelons for Dutch football, Ajax, and obviously brought that sort of energy and dynamic approach to the beauty of the game to Barcelona and rooted and seeded what we now see here. But I think ultimately when I, you know, knowing Johan and as a father-in-law, he really had a passion for play, right? He really believed romantically that it's a sport, and a sport should be for community, should be the benefit of the community, all members of the community, whether they be children that are marginalized or handicapped or people that come to the game and are in their 70s and 80s and want to be a spectacular outing. He really believed in his heart that sport was the opportunity for a community to come together and celebrate all that could be joyful, win, lose, or draw. Sport always maintained a perspective. And I always admired that, given that he played under the most competitive lens possible. But he always wanted his players laughing. And I always remember him speaking, I just want my players enjoying the game, even in this pressure cauldron of Camp Nou here in Barcelona. So I took a lesson from that, in that if Johan at the highest level was speaking about joy, then certainly, you know, a humble, you know, gringo, a humble Yankee like myself can take some lessons when I'm working with young children, which I'm privileged to do.
Already such a great message, you know, that the power of engagement, right, and fun and enjoying what you do. And like you say, and again, I'm not trying to knock the grassroots culture in the UK, but it isn't always fun and isn't always the engagement. And you think, my God, there's no pressure on you running your grassroots Sunday league team for under 10s. You know, there's pressure at Barcelona, the Nou Camp, you know, that's real pressure. And if you can do it there, then surely we can do it in our little world. But I'm sure we'll come on to some of this stuff in a minute anyway. Not to be too presumptuous, Todd, if it's okay, but, you know, would you mind just briefly, if you can, giving an idea about kind of your coaching philosophy and principles, if that's a fair question to ask, just to paint a picture for listeners about how you see coaching and what's important to you.
Yeah, you know, I think I had kind of a couple of phases or transition. I grew up just kind of following the party line in the United States. That would have been the Federation, and drilling and drilling and drilling. And then I just started recognizing my gut. I was getting more out of the children when we were dynamically engaged in competitive matches, small-sided games. The end of training was always the best part of training. And I thought, well, you had to kind of trudge through these drills and the things that nobody likes to get to the joy, right? And then I started to experiment and recognize that, we can bring out the best in players. So if you fast forward to meeting Johan and being, I guess, validated in this concept that the sport is about learning and joy, which I assume should always be the case with youth, but I didn't realize it should always be the case through the competitive nature of the game at the highest level. So it gave me the validation to say, well, if the game is about learning and joy, then my objective as a coach is to promote learning and joy. I mean, it's not rocket science, right? But if I go out thinking that my job is to go win and drive these kids and make them suffer so that one day they may enjoy the game beyond me, it's just a false paradigm. And I started to recognize that more and more. And when you have children of your own, you recognize you just want your children to be in an environment which is positive, where they're learning, where they're evolving, where they're establishing relationships, and where they're just enjoying themselves. And so you combine coaching and parenting, and I think you have the greatest nexus of perspective. And for me, just to sum it up, it's really simple. The clear overarching objective is to promote learning and joy. And I don't think that's even football related, although it is football related for my profession. Our job as adults is to promote learning and joy for the young people in our charge. So when you start to build a methodology off of that, it becomes abundantly clear that I'm trying to nurture players in the game of football that have the capacity to see the game, vision, to execute the game, precision, and to demonstrate a positive, ambitious character and the courage to play in a game. So that's just with those thoughts, the overall objective of learning and joy, and my objective of nurturing players of great cognition, competence, and character, you start to get into the how. And when you get to the how, you only select the activities that accomplish those objectives. So you filter from the macro to the micro. And if you spend enough time researching like I have, you end up jotting down enough notes and learning from enough bright minds beyond the game to come up with some sort of sense of identity for yourself, which we call TOVO, which is in short, Totaal Voetbal in Dutch, to honor Johan's contribution to my thinking on this game.
If it's okay, so we'll come back to TOVO in a minute or two. Just a bit back, your background about your educational background, because you said at the start that maybe that's a thing or not a thing that influences this. But how much or how helpful has it been having an understanding about education and kind of, I guess, pedagogy and how that works in relation to coaching? Because a lot of people, you make it sound so easy and so simple. And I love listening to you speak because you make me think, yeah, that's all it is, Scott. Just go and do that. And actually, when you stick to it and you do your research and work around it, it isn't as hard as, you know, as we make it sometimes as coaches. But a lot of coaches still don't do it. And I wonder, is it the educational bit that's missing? That there may be parents, there may be quite a good coaching, but is it the education part that's the bit that's missing, or is it something else?
Yeah, I would say I don't know how I would be able to coach without understanding child development and pedagogical practices. So I'm fortunate because simultaneously, as I was playing and coaching and studying, I worked toward a master's degree in pedagogical application, right? So you start to study the Maria Montessoris and the John Deweys and then future, and you fast forward to like a Doug Lamalve out of the United States, who is a master craftsman, right? And you start to learn from the great educators. Forget about football. How do I maximize the potential of a child in my charge is what I need to know. I think in football, what happens, we go to our federation, but the federation is probably the least qualified to teach me about education. It's not about the X's and O's. It's about how do I maximize the potential of a child in my charge so that they learn and they enjoy the experience. That has nothing to do with football. So I don't know how I would be a coach if I didn't understand how to be an educator. And I consider a coach an educator, probably because of my bias and background. But it gave me great tools to recognize I'm here for one purpose, to educate a child, to develop a child. And that's all about nurturing their capacity. And then if I throw a ball in there and talk about tactical elements, I call it football. Yeah. If I put him in a pool, I call it swimming. If I put him on the sea, I call it sailing. If I put him on with a stick on the grass, I call it field hockey. The greatest coaches, be it from rugby or dance or even art or music or science or in the classrooms from which we've all come, the greatest educators recognize that it's about the participant. It's about the student and their journey to extraordinary. And our job is to facilitate that. So I don't know what kind of coach I could possibly be if I didn't take time and energy researching great educators and following their amazing mentorships.
One of the best courses I ever went on was the guy presenting put three words on the board, and he put kids coaching and football. And like the kids was in big letters, the coaching is slightly smaller, and the football in quite very small letters at the bottom. And he said, this is your best lesson for today. He goes, understand the first one and the other two will sort themselves out in time anyway. Don't do it the other way around. And I think that's your message there, isn't it?
I mean, the thing that makes it, I don't think football is complicated. And you made reference to that. I think humans are complicated, right? Because I'm not coaching one team. I'm coaching 18 independent beings with their own whirl of emotions and energy and hormones and everything else going on through their veins. So the complication isn't a 4-3-3 or playing 7-a-side or 9-a-side football. I mean, that's easy hanging fruit. The complication comes in, how do I understand each child so that I can bring them from baseline to better? And that's magic. And that takes a lot of energy, as you know.
Yeah, so true. Well, you mentioned it already then, Todd, about Tovo Academy. Will you tell us a bit about that, you know, what it is and the purpose of it and what you're trying to achieve with it?
Yeah, you know, working here with Johan and being engaged close to Barcelona, I had a lot of requests from parents and players from abroad asking if I could get them into the famous La Masia, right? And so I realized, well, why don't I just create a private Masia where non-Europeans, or even we have some Europeans, come in, we have a hostel for students, we give them a European training environment, and we feed them, and we educate them, and we train here on the Mediterranean Sea. And the objective was, again, to do a language study abroad program, a culture study abroad program, an academic study abroad program with soccer brats, right? With kids that are just nuts about playing the game. Yep. And so I basically built a program that I wish I could have attended when I was a teenager.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
And I'm still hanging around with teenagers, you know, having a blast with them, because it's amazing. Imagine going abroad from United States or Australia or New Zealand, or even we've had a Czech player, an English player. Imagine going into the Mediterranean Sea and having an excuse to play football while I'm studying and being well nourished and making new friends and becoming a global citizen. I mean, I basically selfishly built a program I wanted to attend myself, and I get to attend it every day. So
that's called living the dream, isn't it? That's what that is.
Yeah, I mean, it's also if you can't find your dream elsewhere, I just decided to construct it, right? Just build it yourself. I can't do much on my own, but this program I was excited to do with people that are like-minded about the role we can play in children's life. So I have a chef who's fantastic. I have a den mother who is a second mother to these children. I have a coaching staff that's absolutely brilliant. I have assistants that help me with administration. So my job is the easy one. Surround myself with good people so that when the kids come, we're going to be off and running as we've been for the last couple of weeks this fall. So it's a train abroad program. Tovo Academy Barcelona is a train abroad program on the Mediterranean Sea. As simple as that.
I saw a photo you posted on Twitter. I think it's about 20 young boys and girls there on a beach. And I don't think I've seen 20 happier faces in a photo. So you're doing something right. You know, it's a perfect format and a nice location to be able to do what they love doing, right?
I get the benefit of pure development, right? Because I'm not in an environment where I'm making cuts, right? I'm not in an environment where I'm choosing who's better than somebody else. I've created what I call a pure development environment. The kids are coming for one thing, to be engaged and move from baseline and to better across multi dimensions of their being. And so I'm privileged. Let's face it. I don't have to win this weekend to make myself a prolific coach. I have to make sure that the kids are engaged and dynamically part of a family that becomes a Tovo family for the rest of their lives. So again, I'm pretty privileged to be able to do it. And the kids we have with, to be fair, Scott, they come from amazing families. I mean, they're ambitious and courageous enough to get on a plane and go far from home as a teenager. So we work with some of the best when we talk about humans growing into becoming global citizens, right? I'm not dealing with teenagers that don't want to participate, that want to shun society, that don't want to study, that don't want to train. I'm basically given 20 children who are so eager to come to training and then so responsible about their studies that I'm privileged and honored to work with them. It's really makes my life quite pleasant, to be honest.
That's great to hear. And it might be part of the answer to the next question I'm going to ask you, because that individual application and that kind of, I guess, that psychological side to a player's desire to want to compete and learn, that resilience and that kind of work ethic, you know, these are some of the things that as a coach, it's hard to give to a player. You can create an environment in which they can come out, but they've almost got to bring that themselves, haven't they? Like you said, the X's and O's you can do, but they've got to bring part of that themselves, especially when they're, I'm going to guess these boys and girls are teenagers, so they're not little exactly. ones. So is that part of the recruitment process to get the players on board? You look at that before you say yes to these players?
Yeah, I mean, we look at their aspirations and we look at how they behaved. I mean, and even, you know, when we do college or even pro assessments for them, we tell them I've coached maybe over 2,000 coaches worldwide, from Christchurch to California and everywhere in between, UK included. What do coaches from under 8 to the professional ranks want to work with? Players of great character. Yep. They need to know that character comes first, right? They need to know that character comes first, because with great character, the ambition you mentioned, the resilience you mentioned, the dedication, the respect, the reflection, these qualities can take them well beyond kicking a ball in the back of the net. Yep. And every adult, whether it's an educator or coach in any sport, is looking for children who bring some sense of identity, some sense of positive contribution, because you as a coach and I as a coach, we can work with that. We can't work with lethargy. We can't work for indolence. We can't work with apathy. Nobody can make a child learn anything, but we can work with children who maybe just need a little extra energy from us to see the beauty in science and art, in my case, football. And as I said, I've got a running start because I've got teenagers who've already demonstrated that character. My job is to put them in a challenging environment so that they hone their skills, of which character is of most importance to them in their future aspirations.
This is probably quite difficult to do in a few minutes on a podcast, but could you paint a picture of what it's like on the program then for one of the players that come along there? What does training look like? How do you do these things? Because it's all great saying about, you know, we want it to be fun and engaging and enjoyment, but also there's got to be challenge, right? And you've got to be stretching them. There's got to be things that they're going to be uncomfortable doing at certain times. So how at Tovo do you manage to mix that up in a blend that works?
Yeah, I mean, we're lucky again in that we have charge of our children. They're staying with us, so we nourish them well. We take care of their academic studies with them as they are completing their studies at the age appropriate levels. We have Spanish introduction, so my staff is taking care of them off the field, right? And that's all I can't divorce the off the field from the on the field, right? So I always start there. It's about academic study and intellectual curiosity is your ticket into our Tovo training. So I always start with oneself, managing oneself. When we get to the field, we start to talk about football, where we talk about managing space and managing the ball. So what did it look like an hour ago before getting on this broadcast on a stadium on the Mediterranean Sea? We'll start with a circle. We prime, take breaths, take a few breaths for gratitude, recognize we're privileged to be in this environment, bringing out each other's best. We'll then break out into rondos, which is a competitive exercise. We'll take a water break after mobility, stability, and dual force exercises. Take a minute and a half water break. We'll move into position play exercises. Again, every child, no lines, no laps, no lectures. Every child is engaged from minute one to minute 90, with the exception of these water breaks where they can let their mind wander. And then after those position play exercises, we've created a training game. It could be 1v1s. It could be today was 5v5 plus two with a big goal and a medium-sized goal. But again, from minute one to minute 90, we're demanding that they are mentally acute and present, that they're making decisions as autonomous beings on the pitch in context. We in a rondo, position play exercise, or a training game. Then somebody wins and somebody loses. And we bump hands today and we call it a day and we regroup, recognize while we have competed, we are each other's best asset as a community. And we go on and we eat together. We dine together. We break bread together. And then they get their studies done and then they're off to bed. And then we do it all again the next day. We mix in some cultural experience. We change the surface on which we play. That picture you saw, we were at the beach. It was a great day to go do a little body surfing. And there's some bonding that takes place in that event. Then the kids, all of a sudden, you know, with these kids, you go swimming, and the next thing you know, a football match breaks out, right? On the beach.
Inevitably.
Tomorrow we're going to a dirt park. Mix it up. And I know the kids, they're eager for it because they're like, okay, I don't care on what surface. These kids want to play. They want to compete, and they have to recognize that they will always shake hands afterwards and be stronger for each other's contribution than they would be in isolation. And they start to recognize that, especially since they're far from home. So we only have one another to rely on. Keep in mind, most kids go for you for an hour and a half, maybe 3 days a week.
Yep.
Most of their social network is school and parents. We have the nutrition network. We are their den mother. We are their surrogate parents while they're here. We are their best friends and family and coaches and educators. So when we get that right off the field, yeah, the kids are amazing. I have a great staff that keeps them engaged.
And it sounds like there's a lot of organization planning and everything that has to be with what you've got going on there with the players. What about ownership? How much do they get to own the process and the journey? Because I'm sure that's part of what you want the players to have. I know how passionate about the cognitive side of the game, but ownership is a big part of that as well. How do you embed some of that for the players who are with you?
It's a great question, because the first thing we mentioned is that they are the protagonist of their journey. So they have to define what extraordinary looks to them. Now, and I don't have to have an answer. I'm not asking for a 10-year plan and have it be perfect. I need to know from them what their aspirations are. Why are they here? How far do they want to go in the game? And what do they want beyond the game? So just that first gathering is about them individually. And I ask them within 24 hours through a bunch of ice-breaking activities and intermixing training and walks along the Mediterranean, they need to know each other's story, because for me to nurture players that are the protagonists, they have to learn laterally. It can't be authoritative relationship. I'm too old for that. I don't understand the language, the music, you know, the colloquialisms. All the things that kids need is lateral. So every designed activity is to ensure that they are the protagonists, and any adult that enters into their life, be it a coach, is to facilitate a journey so that their journey takes, you know, center stage, if you will. Yeah. And they do it. I mean, they do it. I mean, they will do it. You know, I mean, it sounds silly, Scott, but so now they have to make their own bed. Yeah. I mean, maybe mom or dad or brother or sister, or I don't know who made the bed. I mean, they've got to think about getting their clothes clean. They've got to think about relating with people that come from a different culture, a different creed, a different gender, a different age. I don't know how it is in the UK, particularly these days, but America is stratified. I go to first grade with 6-year-olds. I go to eighth grade with 13 and 14-year-olds, right? I never interact, maybe on the school bus, or maybe I see them out, but we even train. We have a player, an amazing young woman who's 13 years old, training with an 18-year-old woman. And in between, we have 16, 17, 15, 14-year-old boys. And so what's remarkable is leadership emerges from them, because the 18-year-olds have to lead, not me. They have to take responsibility. They have to recognize that a youngster is homesick and that they have to take that youngster under their wing. They have to pick up each other when, you know, Coach Bean has challenged them beyond their edge of tolerance in what they're capable of doing. And so as soon as they know that they are the protagonist, and every activity we design is to ensure that they are, guess what? They take that protagonism to heart, and they take responsibility. I've worked with so many kids at different levels. Right, at different levels. I worked with underprivileged kids. I worked with Native American kids. I worked with South Africans from townships. I worked for privileged white boys from Simsbury, Connecticut, like me. Everything. I worked at every age. I can tell you that kids are amazingly resourceful when we see them as such.
So true. So true.
I mean, they're so smart. They're so capable, you know?
I think that's such a good point.
Trust them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Trust them. And demand a lot. I always say, the moment I dummy down, I give them an out.
100%. So right? True.
So they're so capable. They're so smart. They're so crafty. And I don't mean smart in degrees or the level of education or advanced classes. I'm talking about kids in South Africa who have engineered a life out of nothing for themselves.
Yeah.
That's amazingly resourceful, amazingly intelligent children. So trust them.
Yeah.
And just take them a little further than they might otherwise be without you as a coach, and you've done your job. You know, sometimes you said, sometimes I think we get in the way instead of just sit back and guide them to what they already have within them. And I know that sounds maybe a bit romantic, but I've literally worked with tens of thousands of kids now, and they are so resourceful if we trust them and speak to them and listen to them. And I'm not even, whether it's on the football field or the ice hockey rink, it doesn't matter. You know, they just want somebody to be their advocate.
Is that why you use the term facilitate a lot rather than coach? I mean, I'm sure coach is part of what you use, but you facilitate all the time. Is that because it's about the environment you create and letting them lead in it as much as anything else?
Yeah, I like that because, you know, there's two different etymologies of the word, if I get this correct, and somebody probably much smarter than I will correct it. Coaching, its history has this sort of sense of leader and direction and sort of authoritative sort of figure, authoritative sort of entity. And education, the root of education, educare, means to bring out or to bring forth. Okay, now we're talking semantics. It's ridiculous, right? But to me, I consider us educators because our job is to bring out or to bring forth that which is within a child, not to put into an empty vessel what I deem to be important as an adult. So I even use the word educator, mentor, and facilitating more often because it basically just reminds me of what I should be doing and reminds me of what I should probably avoid doing, which is to be the all-knowing authoritative coach who takes these empty vessels and fills them with the knowledge that I'm so privileged to have. It's nonsense. They have so many more skills beyond my capacity. If they were only limited to me, they're in trouble. Right, they have to see the world beyond one person and one story.
If we make it about us and we put a ceiling on straight away, because basically it's our knowledge maximum is their knowledge maximum, then we're actually, you know, and like you say, and often these children can do more than we can do if we give them the opportunity to do that. I believe part of TOVA also isn't just the player education, but also it's coach education as well. Is that correct? And how does that look? And, you know, what do the coach, what's the message the coaches get there? I could probably second guess, but I'm grateful if you could tell us.
No, its origin is interesting because I only created the TOVO training methodology for TOVO Academy initially. I had no designs to take this methodology and share it with the rest of the world beyond our constituents here because I was busy enough trying to figure it out myself. But then somebody started, you know, looking over the stadium walls or sending me a message, and enough coaches from India or South Africa or Mexico or United States start saying, well, you know, I've heard great things. What are you doing that's different? And to be fair, it's every coach that asked me that question that forced me to create a methodology. It's one thing to do something for yourself or to do it with Oscar or Michiel, my staff. It's another to articulate it as concisely as possible so that I could educate another person with whom this methodology resonates. So I really have to thank this sort of grassroots pressure, if you will, to say, hey, Bean, you know, get your stuff in order because I want to know from a distance every morning on the Mediterranean Sea. And from that emerged the coaching education. And we created TOVO Institute to be able to do that online. And we created presential programs to be able to do that in person because enough coaches were asking, I'm curious. And when you get a coach that's curious, you get a coach that is courageous enough to consider other alternatives, which is what I'm trying to present. Not because I have the keys to the kingdom, because I certainly don't, but because we can share our perspective. And those are the coaches I get, open-minded, dedicated, passionate coaches that don't have it all figured out or don't think they all have it figured out. So they're willing to entertain some rethinking and redesigning of talent development structure.
Yeah. And does the coach education part play a big part of what TOVO does now? Is that a key element to it?
It is, because selfishly, I had mentioned to Johan in my last business conversation before his passing, there were many more family conversations after, packaged that for a coach that wasn't in the privileged centers of Ajax or Man City or working under Pep Guardiola, the greatest mentee of Johan. I really wanted to take that package to my home country initially and think about in Vermont, it would be a coach in a Subaru, a bag of balls, some cones, and a patch of grass. Could we build a methodology that would benefit that coach and by extension benefit the 20, 40, or 60 players in his or her charge? So selfishly, I thought I would like to bring this back to improve the coaching in my own country. Then I had no idea that other countries would chime in with as much interest. So it was really organic growth. It was, you know, I have to be honest. I like to think I'm a mastermind. I'm not. You can ask my wife. She knows. Half of my life is by good fortune and accident and just saying yes to the right people. And so I just said, yes, let's do it. You can't come. You're from India. I can't get there. You can't get here. Let me build an online platform and educate you in our methodology. And then you tell me if it's a value. Yeah. And that's how we've had now over, I think, about 2,000 coaches join our TOVO family. That doesn't mean that it all resonates with them. It means they've taken the time to consider an alternative and strengthen their own ideals, which to me is success. God forbid the world was TOVO coaching in every corner. It would break the diversity, which is the beauty of the game. But to entertain thoughts and ideas of others only strengthens the conviction of our own work that we'll go out to do tomorrow, wherever we may be. And I like that. I like that. I like the fact that people come away and say, that's not my cup of tea, but what great conversations we had and great debates we had about child development. And I don't think I'll ever do TOVO training, but it still means it was a valuable discourse. Right. And I think that's what your podcast is about. Right. I don't think you're just asking Todd Bean to come on your show. That would be boring. You're 100%. Asking a diversity of people to come into your conversation for the benefit of your listeners. And so should any education program.
100%. So, I mean, look, I think if anything about football, we know it's a craft, isn't it? And coaching is a craft, you know, it's not a science. It's not a matter of fact. And therefore, it's constantly evolving. And the minute you think you've got it, you're going to be left behind. So, you know, and you can debate about unopposed or opposed or whatever games based or breaking it down. There's not a right or wrong answer. It's just know it all and have the full range of tools, right? And then what's right in your environment for your players, you can hopefully craft the right pieces together to create the environment that suits them. And it will change. And what's right today may be different tomorrow. And I think, you know, with what you put out, and I follow a lot of the stuff. I heard something the other week you put out, and you were talking about, I think you spent 6 hours looking at, was it peripheral vision or something? Because someone was saying about something. But that's what I'm like. You get obsessed with something because you constantly want to learn.
Foveal cells or something. I don't know. Somebody's going to have to come on and correct me. It's something about peripheral vision, and you have different cells in your eyes and a percentage that you can see. I don't know. I can go down a rabbit hole pretty far before getting back to sanity. So,
but that's what you want to do, right? Because you need to know what you're talking about. And that's how you learn. And then you can challenge things and stuff. And you want to be challenged, right?
I think the idea of like, well, I have my opinion and there because it's my opinion, nobody can ever challenge that. I just think that's a cop out.
Yeah.
Right. I just think if you have an opinion, why not? And you're an adult and you're educating other people. It's one thing if I have my opinion and I live on a cave and no one, I don't affect anybody. When I step on a field, it's not about opinion. It's about taking a look at the best practices of human development over the ages and making it relevant to my population, those children who are looking to me.
Yeah.
And so that, yes, we can challenge, because you mentioned, I love the word craft, because it comes with the words hone our craft. Those are so common, right? Hone our craft. And I know, and you made a great reference to it. I know now that TOVO training will be woefully inadequate in the future, because I'm living now, and God forbid it's relevant in 20 or 30 years, because the human condition evolves. Our knowledge about science and learning and human relations and social interactions and the physical being evolves. So I already know, as I'm preaching what I preach today, that it is woefully inadequate for the generation 25 years from now. And that's okay, as long as I don't have the sense of self that says I have to be 100% right and everybody else has to be 100% wrong.
Yeah. It's all part of the evolution.
Yeah. I mean, and there's so many great people that approach their journey differently that are equally or more successful. So it'd be ludicrous to think that one person born in Winchester, Massachusetts has it all figured out and everybody else is, you know, a numbskull. It's just, you know, you just have to be okay with your own, you know, own limitations. And I think I've gotten to that point.
Well, look, you've written a book as well, if you don't mind talking about that. I believe it's called Clear Coaching. I haven't seen the book yet, but I want to say I will be getting it. But can you tell us a bit about the book, you know, why you wrote it and who it's for?
Yeah, I wrote it because it was on my bucket list and we were in the pandemic. And I just sat down for 3 weeks and challenged myself to put forth a model that I've used through the years and try to manipulate and evolve through the years. And I thought, if I could concisely and clearly, it's only a couple of cups of coffee probably for you to read the book. I mean, basically, it's not War and Peace, right? It's not Tolstoy. So I thought, I want to take, and it took like 50 plus years and 3 weeks to write.
Yeah.
I literally sat down during the pandemic and thought, I want to share this model to clarify my own thinking and to challenge myself to articulate to an audience that can give me feedback on that. And then you just learn how to self-publish and put it out there. And it has a life of its own. With some, it resonates and you have conversations because I took the challenge. It's not because I'm an accomplished author or I expect to sell millions of copies. It was really an exercise to sharpen my mind and to connect with people who could contribute to that conversation. That's the beginning and the end of that motivation. And I'm going to be honest with you, Scott, I've never seen a copy of my own book. Only I don't have one. I literally, because it was pandemic and Amazon and shipping and everything else, I literally don't have a physical copy. I had to call a friend to say, does it look normal? Like, is it cover upside down? I mean, does it work?
Yeah.
And they said, no, it looks fine. It could go out. I'm like, okay. So I think I'm one person. I don't have a copy. So you're not alone.
I'm going to get a copy, so I'll have one more than you when I do get one. But when you went through that process then, did anything surprise you? Did you suddenly think, actually, oh, I didn't know that like I thought I did, or actually I've changed my view of that? Because there's nothing like trying to explain something to somebody else, is there, to make you think about it yourself in a bit more detail?
Yeah, the hardest thing is to take 5 pages of ideas and put it into a paragraph. Because when you're attached to those ideas, you think they're all good because they come from you, right? But you really need to be disciplined and say, yeah, it might be a good idea, but not for today. It might be relevant, but not to this model or this argument or this thesis. So I think the discipline of saying, write 5 pages and whittle it down to one paragraph is humbling, challenging, but ultimately more effective because it does clarify what's most important to you. So I literally, in the book of Clear Coaching, created a model. And then I went step by step and added stories of inspiration so that people beyond soccer, beyond football, would recognize this is a book about coaching in general. This is not a football story. And so it's interesting how many people that have contacted me that don't even coach. I've had musicians and artists and friends and family and people I've never met saying, I don't know how I got a copy, but it's interesting because it's relevant to my work. Right? So it's really not about a book about football. It's about clarity for the benefit of the children or students or employees in my charge. Now, the other thing about being an author is that you write a book and then you have to actually practice what you preach. So in some ways, writing the book is easier than implementing the book.
It's like a contract.
Exactly. Yeah. Looks great.
You're
on
stuck
paper.
With it now.
I've got to comply.
Yeah.
Right. Now I got to get to work. So
yeah, I can see all the parents at Tova waving the books at you from out if you're not doing your job properly, but I'm sure you are.
Yeah, my players will remind me if
your players will. Yeah, actually, your players will.
They have a right to.
Maybe this is an unfair question, but you know, I'd be interested to know your thoughts. We spoke about it being a craft and you know an evolution in football all the time, and football's changed in the last 10 years to what it is now, and you're trying to prepare these young players for the future. How do you see football evolving in the next 5 to 10 years, and I guess more specifically kind of coaching and the environments that we create for these young players? Would you see some big change around the corner, or are we kind of in a good place right now?
I think the competitive edge goes to those that recognizes that the game is about vision and precision, and it would be lost by those that just think it's about technical precision. Because you're starting to see scientists like Geir Jordvet out of Norway and others take a look at the cognitive elements about tracking vision, about understanding the relationship between perception and action and how you couple that to the benefit of spatial relationships. So I think what will happen is we will peak on the physical component and we'll keep thinking that if we can just run faster and be bigger and kick the ball harder and longer, we'll win. And yet you look at the top teams in the world and what do they do best? They manage themselves, they manage the space, and as a consequence, they manage the ball effectively. So I think we'll see more of our staff, our coaching colleagues worldwide, leaning into the role of vision and precision as it stays in a harmonious matrimony. And I hope we see less of the dissection that we've seen over the last 30 years. I think the game will evolve because we'll have more intelligent players, not because we'll have taller players.
Great answer. Thanks, Todd. Okay, my final question, that's okay. We asked this to all the guests. You may have mentioned it in something you said already, but just in case you haven't, if there was just one thing you could change about the world of coaching, just one, what might that be?
Less ego and more joy.
Is that an international problem? Because I would certainly relate to that in the UK, but is that something that's a global thing then?
Yeah, because we attach results to our ego. And as soon as we do that, we lose sight of our agenda to promote learning and joy. So they're actually inversely proportional, right? The higher my ego goes, the higher I attach my accomplishment, me, my agenda, my ambitions to be a better coach, my agenda to win the London Derby at the under 12 level, the further I am from a focus on my students. Yeah. So it's inversely proportional, right? I think that when we stay focused on the children, those kids you said was on that board in big letters, the better we are as coaches. When we're playing, it's about us. When we're coaching, it's about them. And that ego has to change to be one that takes pride in the success of another, your child, your player, your student, your participant, right? And that's not an easy, believe me, trust me, I went through that. It took me a long cathartic process to get out of the way of myself, right? And recognize it's no longer about being the player and my trophies or my championship runs or my wins and losses. It's about the sane, healthy, and wholesome development of somebody that a parent has entrusted me with. Wow, that's a big shift. And the only way that shift happens is when you recognize you are now an educator more than you are a coach. It's hard. And I've made so many mistakes. I mean, we could spend 5 podcasts on mistakes I've made on that journey. So I just hope that young coaches take heed from people like Arsene Wenger, like Johan Cruyff, you know, like a Pep Guardiola on the men's side, like any coach that's available to them in their ecosystem, you know, a Leslie Gallimore out of the United States, whether it's Jill from the women's national team, or whether it's your Dutch or coaches, or it's Marta, who's played the game for a million years out of Brazil and has a message about the beauty of the game for young women. I think if we heed the call as young coaches to those who have been further down the road, who recognize the emphasis is on the sport and the beauty of the player, then as a young coach, I will mature into a better coach more quickly than I might otherwise have, right? And I needed to take a fair amount of time to figure that out. And the best people I know that have taught me had it figured out a long time ago. And yes, some of my colleagues, to be fair, had it figured out a long time ago. So I'm a slow learner, but I get there. I get there eventually.
So what a brilliant answer. Look, thank you so much. And this podcast is exactly for that. It's to try and help coaches out there, you know, just do the best they can and maybe cut out some of the mistakes that we've all made, because the players pay the price, right? And that's okay. They're learning as well. But, you know, the more we can stop that, then the better experience they can have and the better experience we can have as coaches too. So what you shared today has been fantastic. It's been a real privilege and honor for me, honestly, Todd, to have you on the podcast. You're part of the reason we set up in the first place. I listen to a lot of the stuff you put out there. I'm so grateful for your time. I'm glad to hear things are going really well over there. I will keep following the bits you're doing. I will be getting your book. If people want to find out more about you or reach out to you, you know, what's the best way of going about that?
I think just one website, Tovo Institute, TOVOinstitute.com. That'll get you, right? It gets you an introduction to what we're doing, why we're doing it. It'll lead you back into our academy for teenage players. It'll lead you to my Twitter, @_ToddBean. And basically, it's just, like I said, it's just a conversation. We're just having a collegial conversation about how best to serve our children. Everybody's welcome. Everybody's welcome, because we have a lot to learn from one another. And if we do that well, as you are doing here on this podcast, as you mentioned, I love that phrase. They're the beneficiaries, right? Our children, my 6 children that are entrusted to other coaches and educators benefit from those educators. I'm just happy to be part of the conversation.
And you know what, Todd, just one thing I got right as well, because I think it's so important, that you know, if we can show these young players a coaching journey that's fun, engaging, and powerful, they might not be players one day, but they might be able to be coaches one day, right? Right. And they hopefully they'll build on this. And like you say, when they evolve in their own way of doing things, it will be maybe a much better experience than maybe we have had when we were younger. And that's part of it as well. It's part of the legacy, I guess.
Yeah. And I'm lucky because we've even had, you know, in the case, I would like maybe we'll follow up again about how we might be able to do this in England. But, you know, I just noticed today that Rachel Corsi, Scottish national team player on the women's side. Yes.
Yep.
She just capped 125 times.
Yep.
She's part of our Tova family. She's an active legend of the game and she took a course. So we don't have to wait to learn. We have had women at all levels of the game, men at all levels of the game, every color, creed, and nationality. And it's not about age. I always say this. I was thinking about this earlier because people say, oh, you have a lot of experience. And I thought, you know, experience doesn't make you better. Yeah. Learning from experience makes you better.
So true.
So someone like Rachel or someone like on the national team or some player that's grown up in a humble community outside on the streets of London, they may have plenty of experience to share their story from which we can all learn. And I think that's the beauty, right? We all get to play the game, even if we're too old to really do it well. We get to live vicariously a little bit through our players and watch them enjoy it as much as I used to, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, your leadership, I would just also just leave this for parents out there that are listening to your podcast. It's not about being an expert from the FA that gives you a connection to a child, right? It's not about a title, a license. It's about your will to volunteer or to get involved or to contribute something that you can to a child's life. And for the young players out there, I've met young players that already have referee licenses and they're in their teens refereeing under 10 and under 8 games. I just sit back and applaud.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to be engaged in this beautiful game for their life. And I think about someone like Rachel to conclude, who didn't wait to retire to start her coaching journey, because my gosh, any woman that gets to work or young child that gets to work under her privileged experience is going to benefit tremendously. So I just encourage anybody that's listening to podcast, don't wait to be an expert to do anything. Get engaged, because this game has a lot to offer. And I would say more now than ever. You made reps fun now, one, because we're doing what we love, but two, this generation now has been cooped up and literally cut off from playing the game for up to a year and a half. I have a girl from South Africa that hasn't played a game in 2 years through injury, pandemia. And imagine whatever privilege it is now to be with new friends on the field under the guidance of a mentor. I mean, we can't take that for granted. Our kids need us more than ever to enjoy this game and celebrate. And if the pandemic didn't wake us up to what sport is about, nothing will. Right. So I'm so excited about the work you're doing. I'm honored to be here and privileged to chat with you. And as I said, you and I know offline are going to have a lot more conversations and we'll circle back. And I hope that when things settle down, I can come up to London and we can sit down and have a cup of tea.
So that will be awesome. You said tea perfectly as well. So yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, brilliant. Thank you so much. Look, well, we will stay in contact. Like I said, I'm so grateful for your time. Listeners will love the episode and the things you share. And I would encourage them to look at all the bits and pieces you put out there. Thanks, Todd. And look forward to speaking to you again soon.
All the best to you, my friend. Take care.
This episode is brought to you in association with our friends at Spond. Spond takes all the hassle out of organising any group event and is ideal for coaches and managers when dealing with the administration of their teams. We've been using the Spond app for about 2 seasons now and it's been a superb help in removing the hurdles so we can spend more time doing the things that we love. Spond works across any device and allows you to share files, create polls, schedules, manage events, attendances, make payments, send group and private messages, and it even syncs across with your calendar. For more information on Spond or this episode, please see the show notes. Thank you for listening and we hope you enjoyed the episode.